ambitious, creative, and determined.
Hi, everybody. This is Heather Vickery. Welcome back to the Brave Files podcast. You're really in for a treat today. I talk with amazing journalist and writer L'Oreal Thompson Payton. She is out here doing the hard work to bring awareness and intersectionality to women of color, specifically in the health and wellness world. She's got a new book coming out called Stop Waiting for Perfect. She is a mother of a brand new one-year-old. And I am telling you that this conversation is complete fire. We talk about big topics. And the result of a lot of these big topics is the awareness that I am enough and that you are enough. So grab your favorite warm beverage and let's get started. You're listening to The Brave Files, where we share stories from people who've stepped out of fear and into bravery in every possible way. What we know for sure is that when we choose bravely on purpose, we choose bigger, we win bigger, and it's contagious. It's our hope that these stories connect with you and encourage you to embrace bravery in every possible way, day after day. Together, we can build a movement that enriches both our lives and our communities. The Brave Files is brought to you by Vickery & Co., a success and leadership coaching firm dedicated to helping you build a life and a business that you are absolutely in love with. Vickery & Co. offers group programs, membership communities, one-on-one coaching, VIP days, corporate trainings, workshops, keynote speaking, and so much more. Visit vickeryandco.com to get all the details. Y'all, I am so excited to be chatting with today's guest, not just because she's an incredible human who's out making the world a better place, but also because she's a longtime friend. I've known L'Oreal Thompson Payton for many years. We even worked together on the planning committee for a women's creative co-retreat years ago, like way back when, before the world
totally
blew up. And even back then, L'Oreal had a dream, and it was to be a best-selling author. She had her book mapped out in her mind. She knew what it was going to be about. And through a long, hard, arduous labor full of lots of hard work and determination, her new book is now ready for pre-order. Stop Waiting for Perfect is about to hit the shelves. And let's explore how L'Oreal got here, what's still hard, and so much more. L'Oreal, welcome to The Brave Files.
Thank you so much for having me and for such an awesome introduction. Like, that was a nice, fun trip down memory lane. And I just, give me all the feels.
Oh, good. Thank you. It's fun to not just read people's bios. And I don't know, I get so much joy out of talking to people that I know. And it isn't like we're the world's best of friends. We spend time together, but we have worked on committees together. We've worked in coaching situations together. And it's just so much fun to watch you thrive. And I will say that right before we started recording, you were like, I'm here. I'm surviving. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm thriving. But I will say that, you know, it's like maybe it feels like we're dragging our feet an inch at a time. And while this moment may not be thriving, you are this beautiful shining light of perseverance. And then there's a downside to perseverance. And you kind of wrote a book about it.
Right, yeah.
So I would love to just sort of start there and then kind of weave our way backwards. Mm-hmm. I can remember years ago going, well, you can write your book right now. I'd written books. Like, you can self-publish. You were very committed to traditionally published books. And I'm curious where that desire came from and what that journey was a little bit like.
Arduous, you know. Certainly, it had its ups and many, many downs, and it certainly was not an overnight success. I mean, I think the original idea came to me in 2015 as kind of like this millennial manual about living your best life, and it kind of stayed as an idea. Then my Google drafts for a few years before I bought Jen Sincero's nonfiction book proposal course, and she had the proposal that she used for You Are a Badass. And it was like this magic formula, and I followed it. but I still procrastinated because I didn't think it was good enough or it was perfect. The irony that comes back with that, and now the new title, because originally it was Trust Your Dopeness, but then we found out that it was owned, like copyrighted by a global corporation. And so it's just, yeah, been like one twist or turn after the other. And the commitment to traditional publishing, I feel like, is part ambition and part stubbornness. I do feel like it's part of the, it's the journalist in me. And there's something about the, and I'm like, to be clear, not shading anyone who is doing self-publishing because listen, writing a book is hard, period. No matter which avenue you go through, it is really, really hard work. And I think for me as a journalist, there was a certain credibility that came through the vetting that is required of you in traditional publishing, right? Like you have to query an agent and they sign off on it and believe in you and your idea. And then you go through a publisher and they have an editor who signs off on it and believes in you, and having those levels of edits. I think I'm on the fourth or fifth round of edits so far come. And I love that. Again, the journalist in me is like, yes, edit me, make me sound really smart and like I have my shit together, even though that's not necessarily true in real life. And just honestly, the dream of seeing my book at Barnes and Noble, like right now, even having the pre-order link live and my name is on their website, it's a childhood dream where it's like, okay, I not only worked my ass off and I had to earn this. So I think there's a part of the external validation. I'm an Enneagram 3 achiever, wing 2 helper for anyone who's familiar with that personality testing situation. And so there is certainly a lot of it, I think, that is tied to that external validation to be like, okay, I made it and I know this is good, but there were a lot of other people who had to believe in this as well in order for it to make it to the bookshelves.
I think that is so fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. I don't judge it. I mean, you're right. Writing a book is seriously hard work. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how long the book is. It doesn't matter what publishing route you go. But that makes a lot of sense to me, especially given the topic of the book and the reason that you were called to write it. Like, there's something to be said, I think, for going, maybe I shouldn't need all of this external validation, but the fact of the matter is I really like it. And in some cases, I'm just going to go ahead and go there. You know, like I'm here for that. So will you tell folks, and we're going to talk all about your background and your journalism. You're doing so many cool things right now, but tell folks about the book. And I actually wanted to talk about the title change and what that process was like for you. So I'm glad that you brought it up, but what is Stop Waiting for Perfect?
It is about overcoming imposter syndrome and self-doubt and ultimately perfectionism, which I did not set out to write about that last part necessarily. And then I think about that Toni Morrison quote about, you know, if there's a book you want to read and it's not out there, you have to write it. I may have paraphrased that a bit, but
pretty close though.
Yeah. Writing this has been such a masterclass. It also writing it at the same time as becoming a new mom. Yeah. Both of those have been just kind of like a crash course in letting go of perfectionism. And what I realize I learned through this process that procrastination is like my special brand of perfectionism, where I wait until the draft is perfect and I sit on ideas for years before taking action on them, because I'm waiting for the perfect moment. I'm waiting to have all my I's dotted and my T's crossed. And that's just not life. Mm. Because if you're waiting for this perfect moment, you're going to end up waiting forever and you're going to not ever do anything. And how depressing is that, right? To have these great ideas that just kind of stay on your notes draft. Like, that's no fun. And it's not serving you. And it's not serving the people that your help, like your work and your art are meant to help.
Yeah. So how do you overcome that? Was it just having deadline? You just have no fucking choice.
Right. Yeah. Deadlines help. Again, I am very deadline driven. I've been doing journalism professionally for 15 years. And so I live and die by deadlines. It's that external accountability because, again, left to my own devices, I'll just be chilling and kind of like, I'll get to it. Eventually, I'll get to it one day. And having someone on the other end be like, hey, this is due, certainly helped with that. And then throughout the course of writing it, I realized I was trying to do my job and my editor's job at the same time. And wait a minute, girl. Right. Like, you're not getting paid for all that. Like, why are you trying to do her job? She is the editor. Yeah. She will help take you over the finish line. She will help your words sound better. And she really did. And Rachel, if you're listening to this, I love you. And I am so grateful for your patience, because in that perfectionism, we actually ended up pushing back the deadline a few times because I was like, well, what about this? And I want to change that. And then it finally, like the last set of line edits or so, she was like, this is your last chance, right? To make any editorial changes, because she knew that if you keep giving this to me, I'm going to keep finding things wrong with it. I'm kind of keep thinking of things to add. And I read this tweet, and I forget off the top of my head who sent it or who tweeted it, but it was essentially about how you can't edit nothing. And so I got to a point with the book, with the first draft, that I was just like, I can only take this so far, and I'm writing, you know, everything that I know and research that I've done, but you have to start somewhere. Like, my editor will go in, she will make it better. She will help with that. The copy editor will find the mistakes and the typos and everything else like that. But they can't do their job if I don't do my job, and my job is to write.
Yeah. Good for you. It is hard to do that. I loved my editors as well. And I am here to tell you, I'm sorry to break this to you. You are going to get published, printed copies of your book, and you are going to find errors.
Yeah.
I mean, I've found them in best-selling authors. We both love, like, I've found them in Talia Hilbert's books. I've found them, they're everywhere. And they're certainly there in mine. And some of your friends are assholes, right? Some of them are like, so that I found this, I was like, just shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Just walk away from me right now. Like, right. We'll fix it in the next edition.
Exactly. It's good enough. And that's the thing. It's like, progress is better than perfection. Getting it out into the world with all of its inevitable imperfections is better than it sitting in a Google Doc for years, which it did for a while.
Yeah. Well, and you chose, I think, maybe I have this wrong, you had the book outlined for a long time, but you didn't really start writing it until you got, was it picked up by a publisher?
Yeah. So with nonfiction in particular, because even within, so there's like self-publishing, traditional publishing, and even within traditional publishing, the process varies according to what you're writing. So for fiction, you have to have the whole manuscript ready before you send it out to query. With nonfiction, it's a little bit less daunting, for me at least. And I had the like introduction and two sample chapters, and then the outline, and of course all the marketing analysis and everything else that goes into it. But yeah, I didn't. And I think it was like also part not wanting to jinx myself, like as superstitious as that sound, that I didn't start writing it in earnest until we got the book deal. So I feel like, and even though my agent was like, because after we signed, I was like, what do I do? And she's like, you start writing. Or while we were waiting, like, you know, for the paperwork and every, like the ink to dry, the electronic ink. And she's like, you start writing. I was like, but what if it's, you know, like, what if something goes wrong? What if it's not official? What if they take it back? What if? And so I was really hesitant to start pouring myself out into these pages because I didn't want to jinx it.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I totally get it. I tend to personally be in the camp of just do the, and I do the thing at the very last minute. So that's how I reframe perfectionism. Mm-hmm. I do my best work at the last minute. So, sounds better for me, but like, we'll just put it, do it. And then like worry about the next phase later. But I think both approaches are reasonable. Now you did this with basically a newborn the whole time. And you've been really, really open about this after years of struggling with infertility. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know what, if any, how did that impact the prep, getting ready, getting the book out to people, shopping it, that's what they call it, right? Shopping it around. And then what was it like to write with the new baby?
Oh my gosh, the hardest thing I have ever done. In many ways, the book is and was, like, continues to be harder than the baby because there's help for the baby, right? Like, at the time I was starting to write it, we were still living with my in-laws. And then when we moved back to Chicago area, now she's in daycare. And so there's help. There's my husband. He is super supportive and hands-on, which should be the default. I don't know why we need to,
like, why we need to actually say that. Yeah.
But, you know, society. And so there's help for that. When it came to the book, sure, there's help. There's my agent and my editor and, you know, like people have coaches and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, mm-hmm. it came down to me putting words on the paper. And it's just the whole process of, for both of them, for the book and baby, these multiple tries, multiple, you know, putting yourself in there, multiple rejections or failed IVF cycles. And then everything happened all at once. Like in February 2021 is when we got the positive pregnancy test after four failed cycles. I think she was like lucky number five. Yeah. And then in May is when I got the call that there was an editor who was interested in the book. And the first deadline was in October, I believe, which was around the time of my due date. And I was
That's
like,
easy, no problem. Yeah.
And we hadn't told the editor yet, the publisher, that I was expecting. My agent knew, but I didn't want that to, for some reason, you know how mm-hmm. things are, weigh into that. And so I was like, I think we need to tell them. And so we had pushed it back, I think, to either December or January. And because in my mind, I was like, oh, I'll have time to write while she's napping. Heather, it was. And my agent kind of laughed at me. And like, Jessica was like, okay, she's a mom of three. So she knew better. She was just kind of like, all right, I'm going to let you kind of like
figure that out.
And then I think as soon as it was maybe like November or so, a month into like maternity leave, yeah. In quotations marks, because it is certainly not a vacation. I was like, oh, this shit's hard, like yeah. way harder than I expected. And I'm super sleep deprived. And yeah, can we push that back? And so that I think was the first kind of lesson in all of this of letting go of, you know, this tight schedule and this perfection, and like everything has to be by the book. And I was writing chapters in the notes app of my phone while nursing at like 3, 5 a.m., right? Because there's no waiting for the perfect moment to sit in the coffee shop with your oat milk latte, listening to your lo-fi hip hop. You get in where you fit in with a newborn in hand. And so, and now, you know, a year and a half-ish into parenthood, I'm, and being an author, like, am going to certainly work smarter, not harder, next time around, and sure. be more protective of that writing time and carving it out and being more proactive instead of reactive. But, you know, at the time I was just, and then I had the, you know, wisdom to go and pick up a 9 to 5 and writing for Fortune in the midst of all of it. So last year was just, it was chaos, just pure chaos.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it sounds really intense. It's hard to have babies. It's hard to write books. It's mm-hmm. hard to be human. Like, I feel like, and one of the things that I so admire about you is your transparency about all of it. So for those who don't already know L'Oreal, you have an incredible newsletter that comes out every week, LT in the City. And I've told you this before lots of times. You're probably sick of hearing me say it. It's one of the few newsletters that I actually open and read every week. And I get a lot of them. And I'm like, I can't be bothered. But I'm like, oh, what does L'Oreal have to say this week? Aww. Like, I always want to hear it. And you're really honest about, you know, when you're pushing hard, when you're going hard, when you're resting, when you're taking a break, because mm-hmm. you did do that, right? You paused yes. a number of things at some point just because deadlines were looming and mm-hmm. shit had to get done. That's exciting. When does the book actually, what's the release date?
Yeah, August 15th.
August 15th. That's going to be here before you know.
I know.
I know. It's so crazy. It's so fun. I have to tell you. So Violet, it's too little for this, but my book, Fuck Fearless, came out not this past October, but the October before. And mm-hmm. I was dropping my kids off at their dad's house and he had decorated for Halloween. And I looked at my youngest, who was, you know, I think 7 at the time. And I said, oh gosh, are you disappointed that I didn't decorate for Halloween? She goes, Mama, you made a whole book. I'm not disappointed in you.
I love that.
I know. Isn't that sweet?
No, I have the same, like I have so many thoughts and feelings about that, because I was just telling Jeff, like, oh shoot, I didn't like put together the Easter bag, because we just went through Valentine's Day and this is our first like full calendar year in daycare. And I didn't realize that these like school holidays start so soon. Like in yeah. my mind, elementary school is when we have Spirit Week and, you know, yeah. all the things. But no, she got Valentine's from her classmates. And I'm like, you are a year old.
Yeah, she's like, one.
What are we doing? And they are so creative. And even with trick or treat, like they're moms that go all out. Our neighbor is like one of those moms, you know, like she, for every holiday, they have the seasonal decorations. And I was starting to feel bad, like, oh my gosh, like I didn't do her Easter basket yet. And cause I know my mom will take care of it. Like she's done, she still does Easter baskets for me and I'm 35. Yeah. And he's like, is that important to you? Like, I don't think that matters because you're doing all of these other things. Like you're not that kind of mom and that's okay. Like I'm going to make sure we do some kind of Easter egg hunt or something fun like that. But as far as getting and gathering all the materials for the basket and make it like, no, that's just, that's not me. And I don't have the time, the energy or the interest.
Yeah. I think that's really, really important. I made it sound like I am that mom and I'm really not. We would put up, this year we put up a few things. You know, you hit up Michael's, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, I got a $40 budget. What shit can we buy for our friend? And I really let my kids do it now. And they had a lot of fun. I was like, here's the stuff, go and do it. But you cannot do everything. Mm-hmm. And I tend to be in the camp of preschoolers don't give a fuck about Valentine's. They don't understand. They don't know. They won't remember. Maybe you'll have a picture mm-hmm. or not. Like, no. Yes. I love Jeff for saying that to you. Like, you don't – because you are an incredible mom. You are an amazing person. And when she looks at your legacy, oh, I have chills just thinking about it. She's going to be like, well, what? My mom's way better than that cookie mom over there who did all the decor. Sorry if that's you, listener. Yeah. You're great too.
We love cookies too. Yeah, exactly.
We love you too.
All moms matter.
Right? There's room for all of us. Actually, that's really interesting. So I just finished listening to I'm Judging You by Lovey Ajayi. And I said that right?
Yes. Yeah.
I think I did. I was like, okay, which I loved, but the whole chapter on feminism, like the whole point is, and it has been historically very white woman centric and I want to be part of changing that conversation. But the whole point is not to make everybody alike.
Yeah.
It is if you want to wear a hijab, fucking yes, I am here for you to do that. If you want to wear dental floss out in public, I am here for you to be able to do that, like whatever it is. So whether you're the mom that decorates for everything and decks out the one-year-old's Halloween costume, or you're the one that writes incredible best-selling books, all good. Right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
There's room for all of us.
There's room for all of us. Okay. So you have been a professional writer, a journalist for a very long time. You've taken some detours in the nonprofit world a couple of times, but you've never lost that thread of being a writer. What does it mean to you to be a writer?
Oh, it means everything. I mean, it's part of my DNA, my purpose, my passion, my mission. And it goes back to, it's funny, there is a picture that I included in the book, my earliest known memory of writing. So I'm about three-ish, if my sister's about 6 months, and it's a picture of the two of us on the sofa in my parents' living room. And she's like propped up in the corner. I don't know if she could actually like sit up on her own yet. And I'm sitting next to her and I have this spiral bound notebook and I'm writing what? I have no idea. Probably a bunch of scribbles. I remember distinctly writing stories in these notebooks in cursive, again, quotation marks, because it was chicken scratch, as my mom would call it. Like I was just scribbling, but then I would read the stories to my family and it changed every time because three. And also I didn't, like, I don't remember what I was writing.
Right.
I couldn't really read at the time, but I always loved reading. I've always loved books and creating these stories. And when I was six, thereabouts, and it was like the summer before first grade, I wrote a story about dinosaurs in outer space. And I also illustrated it. And this one had actual words. It wasn't just chicken scratch then. It was like, you know, I have working on penmanship and everything. And summers we spent at my grandparents' house when my parents were working, and my dad, after a shift as a firefighter, came and picked us up. And I was like, Daddy, look, I wrote this book. And at the time, I was in the summer reading challenge for the local library, which I still participate in because I love libraries. They're the best. And he was like, oh, you should add that to your list. And I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, this isn't a real book because I'm just a kid. And his reasoning was, if you wrote it, then you read it. And so it should count. And I think that was like the first instance of me overcoming imposter syndrome, right? And this self-doubt. And it's all because my dad believed in me, saw something in me, believed in me when I didn't believe in me. And that has always been true. He's like my number one. He's my first fan. And so that gave me the confidence. Then later on in life, in high school, I was editor-in-chief of the student newspaper and a literary magazine. I got in trouble for being a outspoken feminist, even though I didn't know it at the time. But I went to a very conservative, all-girl Catholic high school. Oh, and you can see why that might create some tension. But no, I mean, I grew up reading teen magazines, like YM and Cosmo Girl, all of the ones that are now sadly defunct. But I didn't see myself represented in those pages. This was the Britney Spears era, the Christina Aguilera era. Everyone was blue-eyed, big boobs, and blonde hair, and I didn't fit that mold. And I still love these magazines. I read them every single month, but I didn't see myself. And so I wanted to be that change you want to see. And I knew that writing was my superpower. That was the best way I knew how to implement change. In my column when I was in high school, I wrote about body image and self-defense. My friends and I had gone to see that Jennifer Lopez movie Enough. And I was like, if you're ever in this situation, like, let me know and we'll kick his ass, right? Like 16-year-old me was just like really on it. But I would get comments, you know, like notes and stuff from my classmates about how my messages, my columns, like helped them or landed with them or helped them feel less alone. And it was then that I knew the powers of my words and having a platform to share that message. And it's what I've continued to do throughout my career, talking about IVF, talking about changing careers and all of these things openly and transparently, because at the end of the day, I just want to help people, but especially Black women and girls, feel less alone.
I love that. I think that is, I mean, it's representation really, 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 really matters. And I'm not sure, because I was always physically represented, that I had any understanding of that until I was well into adulthood and could see things from other perspectives. Now, I do think, although the world is a dumpster fire, we said that earlier, that our kids, my kids, are very aware. Mm-hmm. They would notice if they saw an ad that was all white, or if they saw a movie, like they'd be like, huh. And so I feel like we're making some ground on that, which is good. But you are such an incredible, honest, authentic role model. I really struggle with people who put this false front out that just looks perfect. And I don't, I'm not trying to throw shade, and she's also white, but Kardashian, like that kind of thing. Like, dude, that's not real life. That's not real life. And it's not, it sets unrealistic expectations, and it just makes us feel bad all the time. So you bring this realness. And I will say also fabulousness, because you took these pregnancy pictures and newborn pictures with Violet. I was like, damn, these should be in a magazine. Like, listen, hello, I'm gorgeousness. Scorpio.
If there's one thing I'm gonna do, it's the most. And I was also, but like in transparency, we're spiking like vulnerability and everything. I had this, because I mean, like, they're fabulous pictures and also expensive. Like makeup alone is.
Yeah.
But I was telling Jeff, I was like, listen, we worked so damn hard for this moment.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of PTSD for me personally wrapped up in infertility, where I'm like, you know, sure, we have hopes and dreams of having another kid and rounding out, you know, being a family of four. But if for some reason it doesn't happen, I don't want to have any regrets. Like, I'm going all out, balls to the wall. Like, we're doing the photo shoots. We're doing the smash cake. We're doing the big party. We're going to, like, celebrate everything about this, because there is a part of me that is scared that it won't happen again. And so I don't want to look back and be like, oh, I wish I had. I mean, honestly, that's the reason I'm still breastfeeding 17 actually months into this, because I'm, and I, it's much easier now. When I was pumping 3-4 times a day for 45 minute sessions each, like that was really hard and demanding physically, emotionally, mentally. And now it's just, you know, in the mornings and in the evenings before she goes to bed. And I love that bonding moment that we can have. It's also kind of like, okay, here's a thing that my body actually did right. Because there's so much that, you know, kind of was working against me with fibroids and infertility and everything like that. And also just because I'm like, I don't know that I'm going to get to do this again. Yeah. So I want to enjoy it while I can.
Yeah, I feel that. I have four, as you know, and as everyone who listens to the show knows, because I talk about them all the time. But I'll tell you what, because I got pregnant really easily and I didn't have the struggles you had, it wasn't until my third kid that I figured that out, that I was like, oh, with the others. Oh, when is she going to crawl? When's she going to walk? When's she going to talk? When's she going to do this? When's she going to do that? Rushing to the next thing. Mm-hmm. By the time the third one was born, I was like, oh, she will do all the things. Let's just sit here. Let's just be still. And that felt like a really lovely gift to both of us. And now with my youngest, I wish we could go back and do it all over, which I know people with small children are like, you wish you could what?
Right. Yeah. That newborn stage, especially, I was my least favorite. And I feel like no one talks about that. And I felt a lot of shame because of our story and our journey. And here we go with, again, shitting on ourselves. But I was like, oh, I should be grateful for every moment because every moment is a blessing and you work so hard and blah, 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 blah. And that was robbing myself of that humanity, right? It's a both and. I can be both really grateful for this moment and for her and for, you know, a healthy pregnancy and everything like that. And also recognize that this moment is really hard right now. And, you know, I'm struggling. Both of those things can be true.
Both of them can absolutely be true. And to me, that's where self-compassion work really comes in, right? Is I feel this, I acknowledge this, I welcome with that without judgment. And then what do I want to do? Because sometimes when we're just honest about what I call the mixed emotions, then they just sort of work their way out a little.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Loria, what would you say? So you've been spending this last couple of year and a half. This is going to sound dumb, being a full-time human. But when I say that, I mean like really being a full-time human who is getting to know yourself and understand yourself and be honest about that. All the stuff we've just talked about, writing professionally, writing for yourself, being a new mom, being a spouse, all of that. What do you now know is true that you never expected to be true?
Ooh, I love that question. And the first thing that comes to mind is that I'm enough. And it sounds
No, it's good. I got chills.
Cliche. Yeah, but it's just because like all the things I've just said earlier, being an overachiever, being really ambitious, being that Enneagram 3 wing 2 is just like, I have to do all the things. I have to do it all at once. I have to be perfect. There's something from a very early age. I mean, I was the kid who got straight A's. I skipped a grade. I graduated magna cum laude. I had the internships. I have all the accolades and like all of these things to like try to prove my worth, to earn love and respect and recognition and all of these things. And I feel like the whole raise a tiny human while writing a book and doing all the things kind of broke me in that way, because it was just like, it felt so impossible in the moment. And I know I'll go back at it and be like, how did I do that? But in that process, I had to let go of so much, let go of that perfectionism, let go, because I have this idea like, you know, I have to be the perfect mom, or like good moms do this and good moms do that. And I'm so grateful and count my lucky stars for Jeff, because he's just like, you're enough. Like, as you are, you are a good mom. You know, you show up for her and she loves you, you know, like you're doing all the things, but that doesn't mean we do and get all of the things right all the time, because we are human. And so being confronted with that humanity, I feel like on a very visceral level, just in so many ways, I think beforehand where I'd be like, well, I still have to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. Now I'm very comfortable in like, I did X, Y and Z can wait. Yeah. Or I didn't even get to X, and it's that's okay. Like, I'm still enough. I don't have to prove myself anymore. And I feel like, yes, I was proving myself to other people, but ultimately I was trying to prove myself to me. And I don't feel that need or that pressure anymore, because I know that I am enough. I'm more than enough. And I always have been. But now I'm really starting to see it and recognize it and appreciate it and live it.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I love that. And you are. And it's such a beautiful journey to watch you go down. That was actually one of the questions that I had written down. And so maybe we can just expand on it, is how, because I know for a fact, because you're human, that you still struggle with these perfectionist imposter syndrome issues. The most I think we can ever hope for is just to be more aware of it and catch ourselves quicker and forgive ourselves sooner. But so how are you personally moving through no longer waiting to be perfect? Like, what happens for you when you catch yourself, and how do you sort of recenter?
Sure. That, I mean, it's the whole thesis of the book. I tell people all the time, like, this isn't about, and I know I said earlier, it's like about overcoming imposter syndrome and all those other things, but like, spoiler alert, I don't know that they necessarily ever go away if you're doing life right.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that, I have come to this place where I recognize imposter syndrome almost as a good thing, because it means that I'm leveling up. I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone. I'm trying new things. I'm allowing myself to make mistakes. And so that means I'm not complacent and I'm not content. I am growing. I'm learning. I'm expanding. And so when those moments happen, recognizing that, hey, this is actually a good thing. And also B, the point is to, as you said, shorten the lifespan of the imposter syndrome or the spirals, as I have been known to have and still continue to have. And thankfully, my therapist has helped me with some like tangible tips.
Yeah.
Like, shout out to the therapist, because y'all are the real MVPs. But I have to catch myself in those moments. And I have lived long enough now that I can recognize the pattern. Like I said, it's when there's new things. It's when there's a promotion or starting a new job, switching careers, writing a book, and all of these things. And what helps me is recognizing, you know, like, I have the receipts, I've done the work, I, you know, I have the awards, I have the accolades, I have messages from people, and this is what matters to me most, that have resonated with my work and my writing, and it has helped them in some way. And so that keeps me going. And I go back to that feel good folder. Like, I save those messages. Yeah. I screenshot the DMs and I save them for a rainy day, like when my self-confidence is taking a hit, because it really does remind me of my why and remind me that this is so much bigger than me, L'Oreal, right? Like, that's the hope and the dream and the goal with this work, with this writing, with this legacy, is to, again, going back to helping people in general feel less alone. But like I said, especially Black women and girls, I look at Violet and I'm like, I want to make this world a better place for you and all of your peers and your friends and the generations that are coming up behind me. And so what I'm going to do is share the lessons that I've learned so far, and not saying I have it all figured out, because I certainly don't. Like, when new challenges come about, it always kind of like is jarring a little bit, like, you know, it shakes you up a little bit. But then here's how we take back our power, by recognizing that we deserve to be at these tables, we deserve to be in these conversations. And so showing up like we already know that, like we own the room, and just having that confidence, it's a muscle, it's a practice, similar to my yoga practice. You know, it's not like, okay, this is going to be perfect and I have perfect form and everything, all of that. But no, I'm showing up on this mat some days more than others, but I'm practicing, and I'm practicing courage. I'm practicing confidence and just continuing to show up, you know, and not giving up in the process.
Oh my gosh. That's beautiful. I have literally have tears. I mean, I feel that to my core as a mother in the same way. Mm-hmm. And I sit here and I hear it and I think, God, we have so much more work cut out for us today.
Yes.
In March of 2023 than I thought we would have when I started having my kids 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. And yet we weren't having these kinds of conversations 18 years ago. We weren't, as a society, we as women, we as parents, we did not have this awareness. And so while I think the struggle is big and the mountain to climb is high, I feel like we've got this, we're ready. Mm-hmm. We can do this.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for people like you out in the world doing this thing and helping other people. I mean, I wrote this down, so you guys are going to see it as a quote on Instagram, but like, we take back our power by recognizing that we already own the room and we deserve to be here. Like, fucking A. Girl, so please, you are amazing. Okay. This all feels like a really nice segue into one of my favorite segments of this show, which is celebration. So much to celebrate. And yeah, sometimes things suck and sometimes things are hard, but how do you like to celebrate the little bitty things, the big things? How do you like to celebrate?
I honestly need to get better at that. I'll admit it is a challenge because okay. I am someone who sets the goal, works really, really, really hard toward the goal, obtains the goal, and is already thinking ahead to the next goal, right? Like I just breeze past it altogether. And it's very much that, you know, Jay-Z Swiss Beats song, I'm on to the next one. Yeah. And I have recognized now that that is doing myself a disservice. And I am actively trying, and I'll do like small things, right? Like Magnolia has this hummingbird cupcake every spring that I love. And so I'll like treat myself to a cupcake or a cookie or a fancy cocktail. But I am in the process of planning like the book launch party, and let's have this whole big ass celebration. Yes. I want cupcakes that have the cover on it. I want to have a manicure that matches the book cover. Like I want to do it big. And so I'm working on it. And I think parties, because I had a Renaissance Beyonce theme party for my 35th.
I saw pictures. It was so spectacular.
Those milestone moments, I'm really good about celebrating, but like the everyday success or, you know, when you check off a box, when you reach the goal, I'm getting better at that.
I hope so, because you deserve to have that. And Violet deserves to see you have that so she can believe that she deserves to not just power through. And I'm laughing because I think many years ago when you were in my Chaos to Clarity coaching program, we had a whole section on gratitude. I was like, oh man, sometimes it takes a minute, but it's like any other muscle. And the more celebration and gratitude you practice, the more you see, the more you find around you.
And my therapist has done, she has been challenging me oftentimes in like difficult circumstances, but I also see now, and like you said, the positive ones, and showing her what celebration looks like recently and showing her what rest looked like. I wrote about, you know, we were in Hawaii and there was Diamond Head and we were hiking, and I've done this hike before and I made it to the top, but you know, with a 20-pound toddler strapped to you, it was a little bit different this time around. And I allowed myself to rest and to pause and to not make it to the top. And she, my therapist being like, what do you want? What would you want Violet to do in that situation or any situation? Sure. And she has been encouraging me to do that. So there has been instances at work where I've had to advocate for myself or speak out against something that I felt was wrong, in other situations of asking for more money and other different things throughout. And that's really given me some confidence because it's role modeling these different situations and just kind of like, okay, I can't just, you know, talk about it. I have to be about it because she's watching. And sure, right now she's just, you know, a year and a half, but I know even with like little things and how I sit, like with my leg folded underneath my other leg, exactly. She climbs into her little chair like that. And so she is watching and she's picking up on these different things. And so it's a nice built-in accountability partner in that way, to know that she is watching. And it gives me even more reason to do those things, to celebrate, to rest, to advocate for myself, because it's what I want her to do for herself.
Yeah. I mean, that's mine too. I hear it. I love it. And they'd pick it up so fast, faster than you can even imagine. And to me, there's so much grace in that. I remember reading your newsletter about climbing the mountain, and it felt freeing to me to hear you say, I did a really great job. I went really far, and that was enough. Mm-hmm. And it was okay to not go further than enough.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I think I needed that today. Like, you know,
we all do. I mean, as a constant reminder, and even, I mean, the like emotional side of it, and also physically, just, I mean, I'm still coming to terms kind of with this new postpartum body and what it looks like and how it feels, and learning to love it for what it's done. But I'm also still in a place of acceptance. I don't know that I love it physically yet. And so it's a work in progress, but it was just like, I am tired. I'm going to honor my body and listen to it and the boundaries, and just, again, try to like role model that relationship with yourself and your bodies.
That's so good. All right. So I want to quickly touch on, because you are writing for a lot of really cool publications right now. So I'd love for you to tell folks where they can find all of your work. And you write about kind of, maybe I should let you, but what I see is like this sort of running the gamut you write about authors, you write about really important, powerful topics. You do a lot of interviews. So would you tell folks sort of what your magic is and how they can find it?
Yeah, I love writing about the intersection of lifestyle and wellness, but also with, you know, a tinge of diversity and equity and inclusion, because wellness can be a very white space. And actually my day job as a health and wellness reporter at Fortune, you know, we come across a lot of that. And it's one thing about me is that I'm going to infuse some Black girl magic into everything that I do and how I show up and the experts that I interview and the people that we highlight, and just shedding light on these issues that otherwise go, you know, don't go talked about. Let me try that one again. Pause. Shining light on these issues that often aren't talked about. So I wrote a story about how depression shows up differently in Black women, how the glass cliff is this phenomenon that's impacting us and our career trajectories and being able to move forward when we often don't have the resources, financial or otherwise, in place to help us succeed. And so it's all kind of the same for me. I laughed earlier. We're, you know, now in March is Women's History Month, but in February, getting all of these Black History Month pitches, and I was like, I do this every day. You know, like, it's not limited to February. I am highlighting Black women and girls and what we're doing every day, all day, 365. And so that is essentially, that's what I do. That's what I write. That's who I write for. The best way to keep track of it is signing up for the newsletter.
Yep.
As you mentioned, been writing it every week now for about, off and on, of course, there were breaks and leave and sabbaticals and all these sort of things. But every Wednesday morning on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, LT in the City. And
it's ltinthecity.com, right? To sign up for it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think that brings up an interesting topic. You said, I write for these Black women. Mm-hmm. I'm here doing this work for that. We can all clearly see that I am not a Black woman. And I already said, I really love L'Oreal's work. Mm-hmm. And I think it is very easy to say, oh, this is good, but it doesn't apply to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm glad somebody's out there doing that, but I don't need to read it because it doesn't apply to me. It's easy to do that, but I learned so much by reading what you write and by reading what you recommend and by, you know, exploring that, because I don't have these lived experiences and I can't know more and I can't be a good ally if I don't pay attention to that stuff. So for those of you who heard her say she writes for Black women, it is for you too. You can learn from this. Mm-hmm. Please, please, please go and check out all of L'Oreal's work. And also congratulations on the Fortune job. It's not even that new, but I haven't really talked to you. So that's kind of a big fucking deal.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. I love it. Okay. So as we start to wrap up here, what is your favorite charitable organization to support?
Yeah. One of my mentees, Eva Maria Lewis, we met years ago when I was working at Girl Scouts, and she started a nonprofit called Free Root Operation here in Chicago. And so it's a nonprofit committed to combating gun violence by investing in the healing and empowerment of Black and brown communities. She is just an amazing, phenomenal human being. Like, she's going to run the world someday. She low-key, like, already is. She's an artist and an activist, and the work that she is doing is just, I'm inspired by her every day. Like, she encourages me to be a better human being, and I'm just so grateful that she's in our world.
I love that. It sounds like I need to have her on the show.
Oh, she would. Yes, absolutely. 100%. I mean, she's a Michelle Obama vetted. So, like,
what?
She's mad. She's done TED Talks. She is. If she were ever to run for president, I would, in a heartbeat, be like, can I be your chief of staff? Like, just let me tangentially, like,
that's so cool. Yeah. Well, maybe you can introduce us and we can have her on the show. That would be so much fun. So folks, you know the drill, right? Take an opportunity to get to know the Free Root Operation and whatever you have. If you have time, if you have money, if you want to just let somebody else know that they exist or give them a little social media love, whatever it is, we have to do this together. Like, we are sunk if we don't all show up for one another, for people who are like us and for people who are not like us. We have to do this together. So thank you so much for sharing that. L'Oreal, will you give us your three words one last time?
Absolutely. They're ambitious, creative, and determined.
Yep. I would say those three words accurately describe you. And they're beautiful. And I really appreciate how you have been able to put a really healthy, positive spin on the words ambitious and determined. Because as women, and I don't know about as a Black woman, but what I have read tells me that especially as a Black woman, mm-hmm. that those words are really negative words.
Yes.
We're nosy or we're pushy or we don't know when to stop or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you are out here every day showing how beautiful and passionate those words are. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, for all of your support and encouragement throughout the years. I just really, really appreciate it and admire what you do. And we just need, more badass women out here in the world. And so I'm grateful that you're here too.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you so much. Oh my gosh. I feel so good after that conversation. How do you feel after listening to it? It just brings me so much hope and so much joy to know that folks like L'Oreal are out here doing this work and making the world a better place and showing our children and our daughters and our sisters that they are enough. It's so filled with honesty and charm and I had such a great time. Make sure that you pre-order L'Oreal's book. You can find the link in the show notes here. There's a direct link to pre-ordering Stop Waiting for Perfect. And y'all go get her newsletter, LT in the City. It is one of my favorite newsletters every week. I always get something out of it. She puts so much thought and love and honesty into it. It is truly a weekly delight that I look forward to. I want to thank you for being here with me, sharing this space with me. I know so many of you are here every week. If you're new here, I hope you'll come back next time. If you really enjoy the content that we're putting out here on the Brave Files podcast or our sister podcast, Was It Chance, or my weekly live show, Brave in Action, you can say thanks and buy the coffee for the week by visiting vickeryandco.com/say thanks. Whatever amount you feel called to contribute is so, so greatly appreciated. And when you thank me, I thank you. I'll either give you a little mention and love here on the show or on my live show or in my newsletter. Thank you so much for all of your support and for being here with me. We are about to celebrate the 5th anniversary of the Brave Files podcast. How crazy is that? It's really exciting. And it has been such a pleasure to be on this journey with you. Until I get a chance to talk to you again, my name is Heather Vickery, and I want you to remember to always go out and choose bravely. I'll talk to you soon. Bye. You've been listening to The Brave Files, stories of people living courageously. Visit us at thebravefilespodcast.com to learn more about the show, find our show notes, and access full episode transcripts. And we'd love to know what you think of the show. We invite you to connect with us via Instagram and send a DM. You'll find us at The Brave Files Podcast on Instagram. Our music was created and produced in a custom collaboration with Matt Lewis from ML Creative Consulting, a boutique firm dedicated to helping clients identify their unique sound and amplify their brand with custom-delivered soundtracks. Special thanks to everyone on Team Brave, from our audio engineer to our producers, associate producers, copy editors, writers, and support team. The show wouldn't exist without them, and we are eternally grateful. I'm your host and executive producer, Heather Vickery. Thanks for tuning in.